This is you.
K-U-T.
K-U-T, Austin.
Stop. I used to get mad at my school. Teachers that taught me weren't cool. Holding me down, turning me around, filling me up with your rules. I have to admit, it's getting better, a little better. Hello, and welcome to Higher Ed, KUT's podcast focusing on issues of higher education, lifelong learning, and exercising the brain. I'm Jennifer Staton with KUT 90.5, Austin's NPR station, talking as always with Dr. Ed Berger, president of Southwestern University in Georgetown, Texas. Hello, Ed.
Hello, Jennifer. How are you today?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you?
I'm great. Anytime I'm with you, I'm wonderful.
Well, that's very kind. I appreciate that. I can say likewise.
But you didn't. You could, and yet you did not.
Oh, my goodness. We are parsing words today.
I'm just listening to what you're saying.
Well, Ed, I was wondering, you have a lot of work to do. You're president of Southwestern University.
Thank you.
You teach a course during the school year. Apparently, you also write this president's report for Southwestern every year.
I do.
Every year.
That's right.
And something in the most recent report really leapt out at me. And so I want to just read a couple of sentences, and
sure,
I'd love to hear you talk about this more. So this is from your president's report at Southwestern in 2017. In the decades to come, higher education faces some serious challenges, not the least of which is remaining relevant to the intellectual and creative needs of students who will graduate into a world in which over 65% will eventually hold careers and positions that have yet to be created. Wow. I mean, that, first of all, just that statistic kind of boggles the mind that more students than not will wind up working in jobs that we don't even know what they are.
Isn't that fascinating?
It's fascinating. It's kind of freaky also.
Well, I think it's, first of all, I think it's freaky because in my case, I am pathetically old. In your case, you are mature. And it's, we are moving into a world that is different from the world that we knew, which I think every generation has experienced. And I think that our technological existence is such that the speed of that change continues to accelerate. And that's what we're seeing here.
So from your vantage point in higher education, what on earth does higher education do to get ready for this? Or, I mean, I don't know. We may be on getting ready. I mean, it's on the horizon. What does higher ed do to adjust to this?
Well, first of all, I think there's a mindset. Let's step back a little bit, and then I'll go back into higher ed.
Okay.
But I think there's a mindset for our society and for our world, which is that this notion that I am going to educate myself formally so that I will have a particular skill that will allow me to do a particular thing. What we're seeing and what the data is beginning to show is that that will no longer be the majority. So if you always wanted to be an accountant, if you always wanted to be a nurse, and if you always wanted to, be a welder or whatever, a mathematician, the truth is that I think that those opportunities are going to start to shrink. And again, this is something that we're not familiar with because that was not our world, right? Little kids want to be firemen and policemen and doctors and lawyers or whatever, and then a lot of them would grow up and become them. I think today, young people are faced with the challenge of saying, I'm going through my formal education, including college or community college or a baccalaureate program, and I'm not 100% sure of what that job is, what that vocation is, what that calling is going to be that's going to allow me to have a rich and a fulfilling life. And I don't mean rich in terms of dollars, but in terms of feeling good about the work that you're doing. And that, to me, is a dramatic departure from where we've been. And so now, what does formal education do about that? Well, I mean, of course, we're sitting pretty at Southwestern University and at the other liberal arts institutions, because the truth is, what we need in this age of obsolescence are people who are able to have creative and intellectual agility to be able to ebb and flow through this ever-changing environment. And so therefore, I need people to be as effective as they can be in terms of their creativity and in terms of their thinking. So we need to teach people how to be more effective thinkers and how to be more effective creators of new ideas and to be able to embrace new ideas as quickly and effectively as possible. And you do that, and then all of a sudden, now you can move into these vocations that don't even exist today and not even be nervous about it. Then it becomes exciting. It's like, well, I'm equipped to think about anything. And so now I'm going to think about that.
Is that a hard message to get across, though, to say parents or even students who say, yeah, but I'm going to have to know how to, you know, dot, dot, dot. I'm going to need these skills. I may not even know what they are. And it sounds like I can't get that in college if all I'm, this is in quotes, if all I'm doing is sort of learning how to think, how do I then go get a job if all of my resume says is I know how to think? I mean, I'm imagining that some very practical fears can start creeping in.
Absolutely. And that's because of that we are at this razor's edge in moving from a one type of world and culture to this newer one. And so, of course, we're not familiar with it. And so it does sound scary. So absolutely, I think students will have this concern for maybe about a dozen years or so until we live into that world. And certainly parents and family members will definitely have the concern because also they're paying for higher education more typically than the student. And so I think these are fair questions. And I think that we have to be able to articulate a perspective. Now, just to be clear, I'm not suggesting that we don't teach subjects anymore, but I'm saying, and we've talked about this many times, instead of thinking about the subject, which ends at the subject, it's really about thinking through the subject. So as you probe the depths of the knowledge base and go deeper in your understanding, you're also practicing a way of thinking that can be applied to something else long after you're done, say, with calculus.
Because you've maintained, and I can certainly say from personal experience, it's true that perhaps some of the material I learned in college I didn't exactly retain.
I would say that you're being very modest, and in fact, 99.9% of most material most students do not retain. And that's fine, but let's acknowledge it and then find important things that we can offer our students through their formal education to allow them to grow and flourish rather than just fill them with these kind of either technical kind of skills that will become obsolete or with facts that they're going to forget.
So one skill that I think is never obsolete is working on and solving puzzlers or trying to solve the puzzler.
Last time's was strange.
You say strange. I was going to say cool. I thought it was very fun. It's a little bit different. So remind us what last week's puzzler was.
So I shared last week that I read something that I just did not know before, and I thought it would make a fun little puzzle or riddle. And that is that when we go into a store and we buy something for 99 cents, or we buy something for $9.99 or $99.95, that the reason why it's not $1 or $10 or $100 is because it just sounds, mathematically, it sounds much, you know, much, much cheaper. And I read recently, and now it's been a couple weeks, that in fact that's not historically where that came from. And so my question to our listeners and to you, Jennifer Staton, is do you have a guess as to historically where that really did or originate?
I love this puzzler. And I, what happened was when you were giving it to us last week, I jotted down two ideas and I said, I'm going to go off. I'm going to kind of think about them and see.
Yes.
I didn't come up with anything better.
I see. So your initial thoughts are the ones you're going
to
go with.
I'm going to go with my gut and I'm going to go with the one that seems more likely to me, but I do have a backup.
Okay,
go ahead. I reserve the right.
Can we hear both? And then I'll tell you if either of them are.
Because I think so the first one that I think may be the correct one is I think it may have something to do with, I'm going to say sort of old-fashioned or old-timey like cash registers or adding machines that had to do with how many digits. So if you're at 999, that's three digits. So I'm thinking of, you know, cash registers. But $10 is four digits, four placeholders.
I see.
99.99 is four digits. $100 is five. So I'm wondering if it had something to do with the capacity and mechanism of cash registers way before, obviously, the digital age.
And so what's your second guess?
The second one I think is less likely, but I wondered if it had something to do with calculating tax and that when you calculate a tax on that, it comes out to kind of a nice round number. I didn't do the math, but like, you know, $10.50 or something. I don't know. That one's less likely. But that was the other thought I had is that there's some ultimate goal that makes it easier to work with the number when you start with $9.99.
Sure. Well, I love both guesses because they really are creative and thoughtful.
But I sense I'm getting a vibe that they're both not correct.
Well, the first one is pretty close.
Oh, okay.
Because apparently, according to what I read, the shop owner, so the old cash registers, you're absolutely right. You push those things down, it makes that noise, ding, ding, you know, ching. And this is really a long time ago. That they were afraid that if it was just a dollar or $10, $100, the cashier, the person that's actually kind of running that cash register, could pocket the money and there'd be no record of it.
Oh.
But if it were 99 cents, they have to make change. They have to put in the and then pull it to give the penny out. And so there would be a record of it because that's the only way the register would open.
Oh, interesting.
And so for $9.99, then there has to be a penny returned. And so you can't pocket a $10 bill or a $100 bill or a $1 bill. That's what I read, which I found fascinating.
That is fascinating.
But you were right that it has to, though, do with the technology of the old cash register and using that as a mechanism to make sure that people aren't going to steal from the owners of the store.
Well, and I think you've broken new ground in the emerging field of historic puzzlers.
Puzzlers. Okay, good.
I'll see if I
can get some more.
Oh, great, great. I look forward to some more. So Ed, just as we wrap up our discussion about this statistic that you cited in a report that there's coming a time when students are going to be graduating into a world and 65% of them are going to hold careers in positions that don't even exist right now or at the time they're studying. We've been talking about it from the student's perspective, but I'm curious about from teacher and faculty perspective, because that also requires a bit of a shift, I would imagine, on the part of teachers if they're thinking towards the future in this world.
Well, and this gets back to the point that we made earlier that for families and parents, this is much more vexing and complex than it is for our actual students. And I think that's exactly true here, too. I think that it is really going to challenge educators to rethink what happens in the classroom, what happens outside the classroom, what defines a classroom, what does that look like, what does that space look like, how does that space feel, what happens, you know, during that time period, what should that time period be? It raises very existential and fundamental questions. Not that I think that there will become a time, at least in the next 50 or so years, where we dispense with formal education, but how to redirect our efforts to prepare students for their futures. And I'm not talking about career preparedness, although lots of formal education focuses on that, but I'm talking about just a preparedness to live in a new world, a new frontier, where in fact the world around us keeps changing, including our own vocations. And I think that will be it's a great challenge today for educators. It's a great challenge for me and for my colleagues throughout the nation, but it will continue to be a great challenge until we are used to that space where in fact it becomes very comfortable, where things, people move around. And then I wonder what happens to educators. Will we be moving? I mean, will the future, you know, math professor be doing math for a little while and then do something else for a little bit? I mean, it boggles the mind to wonder.
Or you'll be a robot. Not you personally, but teachers.
So there's a topic for a future conversation.
Future conversation. It occurs to me that just as we wrap up here, that part of the challenge for someone in a position like yours is to make that challenge exciting or something to be embraced and anticipated rather than something to be feared and think, oh my God, I'm not going to have a job. I'm not going to be able to teach. I'm not going to be able to explore my subject. But to frame that as but wait a minute, this is actually an opportunity, not something to fear.
I am so fortunate that I am a member of a community at Southwestern University where the educators are truly open to think about things new. Usually, educators are the most conservative in terms of moving off of what they're used to in terms of the classroom, how they teach, what they teach, and so forth. And I have faculty colleagues who are so open to think about this that when we changed our curriculum, this is the first year that we're living in a new curriculum, and we have this truly interconnected curriculum where we're literally faculty in every single class are challenging their students to make thinking connections and creative connections with the thinking process from our class to something else, to literally show those practices of making those connections. We call that truly interconnected curriculum at Southwestern University, Paideia, which is the name of a Greek word that means the kind of the creation education of yourself. But what it really means is that really they're no longer just teaching the facts and the dates and the algorithms and the methodologies, but they're also on top of that teaching ways and practices of analysis, creativity, and thought that actually transcend the subject itself. And to me, that's really exciting. And so, I suggest all educators, kind of embrace new ideas like we're embracing them.
Well, Ed, thank you for helping us embrace new ideas. Dr. Ed Berger is president of Southwestern University in Georgetown, Texas. You can always find more at southwestern.edu. And you can keep your brain busy by keeping up with the news and other episodes of Higher Ed at KUT.org. You can also find us on iTunes. I'm Jennifer Staton, KUT News.